Welcome back to another episode of the NBA Clinic. You already know what's going on. I am Johnny, my man's over there, Thurls. And of course, we got a new guest, and actually, I'll say the new host of the NBA Clinic, probably from here onwards. Felt like giving up the reins to somebody a lot more capable talking about this shit than me as I go on and explore other ventures. My man's Theo is here with us.
Yo, what's going on?
And yeah, with that being said, we're going to get started with the hottest topic in the NBA right now. Even though it's the dog days of the NBA, it's January. Even the players are trying to wait for All-Star break to come around. We got hot trade deadline speculation. There's a lot of buyers and a lot of sellers in this market. Guys, who do you think is going to be bringing the best sell to the market right now? Who's got the hottest commodity in terms of a trade asset?
I kind of want to see McCollum get traded somewhere else. They got rumors that Philadelphia is trying to get CJ McCollum, and I think that would be cool to see.
Oh, wow. Honestly, I'd be a big fan of CJ for Ben Simmons. Like, if there was a trade involving those two players, I think that would better both the teams in a weird way.
There's been a lot of talk with Philly because that's they were talking about Drummond going there too, weren't they?
Was the Sixers one of the trade rumor destinations for Drummond? I know the big one was like the Hawks.
Okay.
The Sixers is interesting. I wonder why the Sixers would want to. Like, assuming that's true. They don't need another fucking big. Like, they don't
it
need
it. Made no sense.
They have more than enough. Yeah, what are you trying to be, the new Orlando Magic? Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, yo, get somebody who can space the floor, for God's sake.
I think that's where I saw
it. Yeah, they need shooters.
Yeah, where I saw it is they were literally killing the Sixers for, like, why would you even be interested? Clearly, they didn't go out and get any shooters, you know, this offseason. The best shooter that they got was Al Horford, and all he did was plug up the floor even more. So they have a lot of issues.
Yeah, you know it's bad out here when your best shooter is a center.
Yeah.
Dang. Tobias is decent.
Yeah, Tobias is.
He's just not a sharpshooter.
Yeah,
he's nothing more than decent, though. You know what I mean? And if you want to make a deep run in the playoffs and potentially contend, which sounds like, from the outside perspective, is this organization's ultimate goal.
Hopefully everyone's.
Hopefully everyone's. I don't know if I can say that about the fucking Knicks right now, to be honest.
That's a fact.
Actually, you know what? They've been winning games. I'm actually going, sorry, I fucking would turn this into a Knicks tangent right now, but like, you know what I mean? They went on a nice little 3-game win streak. They beat Melo in the Garden. I feel like that was a big deal. They've beaten every game against the Mavs just because fuck Kristaps. So it's the little things. It's the little things, guys. But still, going back to that trade with the Sixers, potentially, I think the only reasonable trade that they should make is for a guard, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Especially, I don't think Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons works. Like, I think we have a big enough sample size to be like, we're withholding these individual players
for sure
from realizing their best potential because we're forcing two great transcendent players to be on the floor at the same time. But like, fit matters, you know what I mean? And Ben Simmons could be playing like Giannis right now on a team, but he's not getting that opportunity. Instead, we're trying to force this kid to take three pointers and he's just not comfortable doing that. And yeah, sure, there might be a bit of will there that could be improved on, but also at the same time, Ben Simmons is great at like damn near everything else when it comes to basketball. So
yeah, I mean, but even at some point, I mean, we saw it with Giannis. I mean, even Giannis this year, he shot the three ball a lot more than he has before. Eventually, he's going to have to shoot because teams are just going to start packing the paint, especially with teams like the Sixers. They gave up their best shooters in J.J. Redick and Robert Covington. So there's really no space. So it's really easy for teams to pack the paint. At some point, he's going to have to shoot something. But yeah, like you said, it's with the transcendent big who actually gets his points off the block in Joel Embiid, it's just not going to work with somebody who's not willing to shoot the ball.
Yeah, for real. I saw something recently where the coach said he was the reason for Ben Simmons. I didn't look at the explanation, but if he really is, like, I don't understand why he's not pushing Ben Simmons. The worst thing you could do is miss.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
and they got bigs down there who could get an offensive rebound, so it's not.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That was the thing about Giannis. Like, last year, people would back off of him, but at least he would try.
Like you guys were saying from before, I mean, that's just a matter of will. When you're not putting the attempts up, that's a matter of will. And I don't know what can speak to a person to make them do that, because, like, I'm sure you guys have played and seen or have maybe even experienced moments of just being completely fucking shook on a basketball floor, like where either you're being the defender and you totally got the player in front of you completely fucking figured out and now they're in their own head, or the opposite, you know what I mean, where somebody is just defensively so dominant you're not as confident doing the things you normally would be able to do in a practice setting.
Yeah, I really don't know what it is. I was also very confused with their draft pick in Thibault.
Yeah.
Considering he's just a lockdown defender, which I didn't think they needed much more defense.
We might have to see what's up with like Elton Brand as a GM once we get to the end of this year. If this doesn't shake out, because you look at like the year and a half that he's been the GM, and you kind of look at the decisions made given the amount of resources he had. Like, you had Sam Hinkie's like tail end of the fucking tanking experience getting all those draft picks. Mm-hmm. Then you have a bunch of cap space, and you already had four all-stars on tow when you inherited the team. And now we're like kind of seeing it 1 year out with all of your decisions being fully implemented, and it looks way fucking worse than it used to.
Yeah.
And it's like, is it going to pick up? Will they figure it out? Who knows? Like, but that'll be an interesting thing to see. I definitely hope that the Sixers are a buyer because I want to see them contend in the East.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I want to see Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid really get their own shine on a team. Like, I feel like it just doesn't work, but who knows? I don't think anybody has the gall to trade Ben Simmons, but I feel like eventually sometime later on down the road, maybe it might be a year from now, 2 years from now, I feel like something is going to happen there. But going back to what we were originally talking about, CJ McCollum, Ben Simmons, that would be an interesting trade. Have you guys heard about any other CJ McCollum destinations?
I haven't.
Kevin Love, I know, is definitely trying to get the fuck out of Cleveland. Yeah. So in that sense, is he a hot commodity?
I heard maybe some things about him to Portland, possibly, but I just know Portland. The experiment with, I know Dame has said he wants to be there long term, and same thing with CJ, but at some point, I mean, the way that they're underperforming this year, they're gonna have to shake something up in Portland. And I think that, you know, they've tried a good amount of like stretch four type bigs in Portland that haven't worked.
Yeah,
I was saying Kevin Love may be, you know, the one that could work there, just because of him already having experience playing with that caliber level player and Kyrie and LeBron, you know, already playing with the ball dominant point guard and fitting that system eventually well, may bowl for more success there in this time, but they definitely have to shake something up in Portland.
True. I think the organization's perspective is that they're waiting for Yusuf Nurkic to come back and be healthy, but that makes no sense. I can't see how Yusuf Nurkic is really going to save your season when you're like outside of the playoffs looking in right now.
Yeah.
And I mean, Carmelo Anthony, in terms of production, especially if you look at this season, is pretty much like 70, 80, dare I even say 90% of what Yusuf Nurkic was going to give you anyway. So
for sure,
it's not like the upgrade of Nurkic is going to be that much better in terms of what you're replacing at the forward position. It's like what you were saying from before, Theo, none of these pieces seem to fit. The idea the whole time has been let CJ and Dame try to be one of the best backcourts in the league and then just get this really good stretch four. It just seems that hasn't worked out, especially given these two players at the backcourt.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully they'll be able to unlock something with the trade. They do have nice, interesting pieces. I feel like the Blazers have always traditionally drafted well and have gotten good players. They used to have Will Barton before he started balling the fuck out on the Nuggets.
Yeah.
Anfernee Simons is nice. I think he's like a nice backup PG. They have one of the Collins. I forgot. Is it Zach Collins or John Collins? I always mix these two up.
I think it was Zach.
Yeah, they got Zach.
Yeah, Zach Collins can have moments as well, but I feel like all these players are really, really young, and you got, you know, two great pieces in their prime right now. So it's like, if you can't make a solid decision on making them the foundation of a championship team moving forward, it might be in your best interest to sell some of these assets while they're high.
Right.
Also, how you feel about Darren Collison?
I like that he gets to choose his team while living in his hometown. Like, what better deal can you fucking walk into? Shouts out Darren Collison. Way to play the whole NBA system. Like, this man was still on free agency.
They said, like, the Clippers might get him just to prevent the Lakers from getting him.
Man, that's interesting. I feel like the Clippers aren't even giving a shit about the regular season. They're just like, all we got to do is take out the Lakers in the playoffs and we'll win a championship. Or at least that's what it seems like their mindset is.
They also like be dealing with some injuries and stuff.
True.
I think Kawhi might actually be hurt. Like, not something where he can't play, like, but like something that like where he actually really needs this rest to perform at his best.
Yeah, I agree. Tendonitis is nothing to joke around with, especially when it's like that severe. In Kawhi's case, it's like you can play. He really does have to take rest in certain like spurts. I mean, he does need to be load managed in a sense, just because of where his body's at. And it clearly pays off. He knows his body the best, and he knows how to get the most productivity out of that. So you got to trust that. But at the same time, when Kawhi and PG aren't on the court, you got games like this recent Memphis Grizzlies game that came up a couple of days ago where they just blow you out of the fucking building on your own home court.
Yeah.
And then it was close against the Knicks, too, to be honest. I also watched a decent amount of that game because I've been watching the Knicks. And, that was closer than I originally thought it should have been. It seems like Lou Will came out and was playing, and so was Montrez, but it's just getting the rest of those guys to really fully be active. And it's tough. This happens to every team when you have a transcendently good player, especially two or three, like the Cavs, for example. Like, even though LeBron was able to, you know, get these teams to the finals and stuff like that, it's tough to be like the sharpest you've ever been when you weren't just getting the ball that much. You're just like literally not getting touches on the floor because it's usually either going to like somebody like LeBron, Kyrie, or Kevin Love, like in the Cavs instance. Mm-hmm. In this specific instance that we're talking about, though, it's really difficult when you got guys like Lou Will, Kawhi, and PG who are probably going to hold a lot of the time in terms of ball possession on the offensive end. So like, you just got to be ready to go even though you're not getting that many touches, and that's got to be kind of tough. But luckily these dog days of January are a great time to kind of like balance that out. It's good to get as many players out playing during this period of time just because those minutes will build to experience that might lead to some form of value in the playoffs.
Speaking about the Knicks, there's a few teams that are interested in your man Marcus Morris.
I know. I think he wants to get out too. I don't blame him. He has been the best player for this team, though. I love seeing him in a Knicks uniform. I feel like he embodies a lot of the Knicks. The fact that he just doesn't give a shit and just takes the ball down the floor. He plays a point center. Just not giving a shit. Like, that's some New York Knickerbocker basketball, baby. Just coming in there, I don't give a shit. I'm going to take the ball. I'm going to punch you in the face with it. Like, that's the Knicks.
He can help just about any contender.
Without a doubt. He is a starting basketball player. Like, he is a starting player on a team. And he's shown it throughout his career because he started in most instances of his career. I've heard the Lakers are trying to trade for him. And I would, as the Knicks, would like to engage in that, because if you can get any assets out of the Knicks, cough, cough, Kuzma, I would love for that to fucking happen.
The Lakers are going to regret trading Kuzma if they do.
They shouldn't even be listening. I don't even know how these rumors came about. Like, if I was on the Lakers side, I'm like, yo, shut the shit down. We're paying this guy $2 million to be on this team for the next 2 years? Yeah. I don't even want to talk about this.
I would like to see him get back to the old Kuz. He's had a couple of good games, but it's been pretty down for him since he's been playing. But yeah, I definitely think I would hold on to him. Like, they don't need a big man either. They need a point guard, because when Rondo's on the floor, they start losing. Like, that's what I've noticed. There was one game where like he had like a pretty good game, and like I was watching and they was losing, and they put Rondo on the floor, and like the second unit started bringing him back in the game. But besides that, Rondo's not the same as he was. He's old now, and they really need that backup point guard for when LeBron goes off the floor.
I don't think that they should give up Kuz for a point guard. I think they can manage better with the lineup they have, I think. But I don't think they use Avery Bradley. And if they start Bron at the point guard and then have Caldwell Pope at the off guard, and then have Rondo and Avery Bradley in the second unit, and play a little bit bigger with Bron at the point guard, I think he's shown throughout his career that he can do that. And that's essentially the role that he plays on the floor, regardless if he's listed at point guard or small forward or power forward. So I just think that they could manage their lineups a little better. I think they try to put Rondo, LeBron, and a bunch of people who need the ball in order to initiate offense together at the same time on the floor, instead of, you know, putting some of those guys in the second unit. Because, I mean, the couple Lakers games that I've seen, and they really do not utilize Avery Bradley at all.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think two of the most underutilized players on that team right now, given the rotations that they typically play with, would be Avery Bradley and Alex Caruso. It makes zero sense to me, watching as many Laker games as I have this season, to see Rondo get more minutes than Alex Caruso at this point in time. I just feel like, you know, going back to what Sterling was talking about, the difference in the gap in scores drop precipitously when Rondo is on the floor trying to lead the offense. Now, in moments, it's for sure clicked. Like, the Lakers-Clippers game was a great example of that. It seemed like Rondo came in and just fed Kuzma, and Kuzma got hot and just started, like, willing the Lakers back into that game. And that's what I was hoping to continue to see after Christmas, but that hasn't been the case. You look at a more recent game, like the Lakers-Suns, where AD and LeBron had this team up by, like, 20-something, 30-something points heading into the third quarter, and then all of a sudden the second unit comes in and plays, and it's gone completely. And so at that point, the Lakers really have to try in the fourth quarter, even though they worked really hard in the first half to give themselves a really big cushion. And you need that for championship teams, because you need to have games you can just put away, not only from like a mental stance, because you want to have dominant games, like that's just good for the locker room, but also on the fact that you need to rest star players, especially when one of your star players is 36 years old. Like, when you have these dominant games, the second unit's got to be able to at least hold the line such that these players are able to get important rests at this time of the season. And that just never happens in Rondo's case. However, Alex Caruso seems to do a better job. Like, I'm only a human being of observation.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I really like Alex Caruso. Like, he seems to just play within his own game. He knows what he's capable of. He's also very good on the defensive end. I definitely want to see him getting some more minutes. I also don't think they use Quinn Cook enough either.
I was just about to say that.
he's proven himself somewhat, like, just being on the Warriors, like, he was able to knock down shots last year when Curry was hurt at times and things like that. He came in, gave him a spark. So, yeah, I definitely think right now they are putting a little bit too much emphasis and giving Rondo too many minutes. Like, I know at one point in time he's one of the great players, especially point guards of the league, but it's just past his prime at this point, and he really can't provide much because he never was the greatest defender. And now on offense, he can't provide the same spark.
Yeah, it's really just clashing playing styles at this point, because when you look at when Rondo was successful, you know, he was initiating offense and pretty much through, you know, pick and roll type offense or off the dribble feeding somebody. And that's, to me, Quinn Cook, Alex Caruso, you know, those are the type of point guards, like, even if they were to trade for a backup point guard with Kuzma, you know, that's the type of point guard that they're going to be looking for, is a point guard who is essentially just a knockdown shooter who can play off ball when LeBron is on the floor, because, you know, he wants to have the ball in his hands, you know, not really a ball dominant point guard, but one who is really just out there to be solid defensively and knock down shots. And to me, that's Quinn Cook, and he's shown that on the Warriors run. You know, when he came in as a backup, you know, they're not a ball dominant, a point guard offense unless Steph is out there. They're essentially running through Draymond Green. So it's like he fits that playing style perfectly. So, and Rondo really doesn't.
Yeah, I definitely think Frank Vogel needs to change of his rotations. I mean, I think he's still trying to figure it out, because it does seem to change pretty often. And with the fact that Avery Bradley was hurt for a good amount of the season with that hairline fracture.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't really explain why Quinn Cook and Alex Caruso haven't been getting more minutes.
Yeah.
hopefully that'll change as we move later on to the season. It is optimistic to see Frank Vogel at least still tinker around with rotations, especially compared to last season. Luke Walton like refused to do that, and that was like one of the most painful things to see. So hopefully the Lakers will continue to figure it out. But like we were saying from before, it feels like a lot of this trade market is dominated on the Clippers and the Lakers kind of strategically building their chess pieces for Western Conference Finals matchup, or even just the deep playoff matchup. They feel like the two big players on the Western Conference. And it's important for the Lakers to make sure that they make the right moves coming into February, because going back to that Christmas game where the Clippers played the Lakers, just seeing how LeBron played, like, mentally, I feel like they definitely need their role players to be clicking on all cylinders, just in case LeBron gets neutralized like that. Again, it's happened twice this season, and it's kind of concerning. Like, I feel like that's not going to go away in a whole basketball series. Rather, a whole playoff series. So hopefully they figure it out as well, but hopefully the Clippers make sure that they're able to maintain and possibly have a good player in reserve, like a Iggy or potentially a Darren Collins, and just in case they can, the Lakers are able to go back and study film on them and kind of have them figured out. And also Jamal Crawford, how is nobody trying to sign this man? That is a travesty.
Anybody who needs a scorer right now, I mean, he is proving it again and again. I mean, there are plenty. Every team in the NBA needs a score off the bench. You need a spark. That's Jamal Crawford, and you know he may not be the best defensively, but there aren't a lot of great defensive teams out there, honestly. So
very true.
Yeah. Also, since you brought up the Kings, not the Kings. You brought up Luke Walton. Can we just say he's a trash coach? I think this season has proven that. Even though De'Aaron Fox was hurt, he came back and they lost more games with him than without him, which makes no sense.
That's just a testament to bad coaching. Like, with things like that start not making sense, that's a testament to bad coaching. The rotations are ridiculous. And it doesn't make sense. I can't tell if it's just from the coaching standpoint, because I also recently heard, since we've been talking about trade rumors, that they're trying to trade Bogdan Bojanovic, which makes no fucking sense to me, because he's without a doubt one of the coldest three-point shooters on that team. And this is a team with Buddy Hield.
But that would be to get Kuzma. They're trying to do that. But
I heard the Kings are hearing offers from multiple teams. So this isn't just a Kuzma scenario for Bogdan. And at that point, I'm like, yo, that doesn't make sense. Like, okay, Kuzma, I could see that possibly making sense. But like, in other cases, I don't know.
I don't understand. I'm like, on paper, the Kings have, I don't know what about De'Aaron Fox injury, but Buddy, Harrison Barnes, Bogdan, they got Trevor Ariza coming off the bench. They have like those two bigs that they just, young bigs that they've drafted in the past 2 years. It's like they have a lot of, you know, moving pieces that they can leverage for a trade. But like on paper, they shouldn't be terrible.
Yeah, it might just be because they're a young team and Luke Walton's a trash coach. Like, usually the combo of those things might get you. But I don't know. Like you're saying from before, the talent is without a doubt there. Like, especially if you look at what they have in the younger players. Like, you got Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox when he's healthy. Marvin Bagley is supposed to be a really nice player. Like, this guy was a top two draft pick. I believe, I remember he was like one of the star players from his class, even coming out of high school. Like, everybody was like, this is the one, this is going to be like the player with the most easy transition into the NBA, given the way he scores. Yeah. I haven't really been able to see dominance yet from Marvin Bagley. Not to say that he hasn't had stretches of looking like really good or seeing, you know, moments of really great flashes of raw potential, but there should be this point, at least in your sophomore year, where you have moments of just dominance where you're like, oh my God, this is it. I guess a good comp in this case would be Brandon Ingram, because he kind of went through the same process. Yeah. There were flashes in his sophomore year where you were like, oh, shit, this guy's
he's in the same.
And I think Marvin Bagley's capable
of that. He's in the same boat as De'Aaron Fox. He only played 9 games so far. He's been hurt. He's still hurt, right? Well, he was hurt. He played like the first few games, got hurt, came back, and now he's hurt again.
Oh, that really sucks. Hopefully that's not a case of him just continuing to be injury prone then, because like from what I remember in college and the way he got hyped up in high school, like this guy's supposed to be a natural born scorer. And we've definitely seen that, at least in his freshman year. But it's just going to be difficult to see all three of these guys on the court and to make sure that they all click properly this late into the season, where most guys try to check out by all-star break if they don't, they know they're not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I still just don't understand how you don't put Buddy Hield in the fourth quarter in a close game, like with a few minutes left.
Yeah, that's illogical. That's just straight up illogical.
That made no sense. He's your best chance of winning, especially because I'm pretty sure De'Aaron Fox wasn't even playing that game. So I don't know what lineup they had all on the court. But with the roster they had, the fact that Buddy Hield was not out there, it just blows my mind.
All right, but enough about, you know, all these Western Conference sellers. Let's move back over to the Eastern Conference, kind of talk about some sellers on that side. And the place I want to start off with is the Detroit Pistons. Y'all want to talk about selling stuff? This shit looks like a garage sale. Like, everything must go. Like, Drummond is on the block. Derrick Rose is potentially on the block. Blake Griffin probably would be on the block if he just didn't want to destroy his career himself. This man just chose to get surgery just because. And we're here right now. Blake Griffin's going to be injured for the rest of the season. And everybody else looks like they're about to get traded. If you were a potential buyer, who are you trying to get off of the Pistons, and what would you be willing to trade for?
For me, you guys know I'm biased, but I mean, Derek has been performing. I mean, he doesn't get as many minutes as I feel that he should. The Pistons were starting Tim Frazier, I think is his name, or some person at point guard ahead of him. And I mean, you know, Drummond has obviously performed as he has. Blake Griffin has another injury riddled season. I feel like I can't remember the last time he played a full season. But to me, I mean, Derrick Rose has been, this team with all these pieces was supposed to at least make the playoffs as an A seed. And I think like Derrick Rose has been the player who is, you know, performed with as little as he's been given the best.
I don't know if y'all know this. Theo, you might not know this. Thurls, you definitely know this. On this podcast, I tend to be a money man, and I had to pull up the payroll because I just wanted to see what we could get at this garage sale. And this is what we're dealing with in terms of the contracts. So Blake Griffin, arguably one of the most toxic contracts in the league right now, currently at the age of 30, is getting paid $34 million right now, $36.5 million next year, and then $39 million in 2021-22 with the player option. Jeez. Obviously, you would have to be an idiot to not take that type of money. Blake Griffin is going to do that. So you got this guy for pretty much $35 million for the next 3 years. That seems like that's just not going to be tradable. After that, you got Andre Drummond, who's got a expiring contract technically this year at $27 million, but he does have a player option for $28.5 million. He believes, or based off of what we're hearing from reports and rumors, he believes that he can get more money than that $28 million, so he's going to decline his player option and go on the free market, even if he gets traded. So it's of the team's interest who does try to trade for him to try to get him to sign an extension. Otherwise, they'll have to sign Drummond to the max, and that's a big, or just watch him walk away in half a year after making a trade. So you don't want to be in that position as a GM. After that, Reggie Jackson, still out here getting these big dollars, $18 million.
Wait, is he out for the season?
No, I don't know if he's out for the season, but he's out here making $18 million. And that's way more than I thought Reggie Jackson should ever get paid ever.
I can't remember seeing him play a single Pistons game this year that I've watched.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't either. I've seen Langston Galloway on the floor. I've seen Tony Snell on the floor. I've seen Luke Kennard more than I've seen Reggie Jackson for the fucking Pistons. What is going on? But anyways, this guy is the third most expensive contract. Luckily, he's an expiring. I know Sterls and me have done previous podcasts talking about the Pistons. And yeah, we just believe, given the value, this dude is overrated. And I definitely think it shows. But luckily, I mean, his contract is expiring. And then after that, you got, you know, the other players that I mentioned from before. Tony Snell expiring, Langston Galloway expiring. A lot of expiring contracts on this. So there is hope for this team. I guess if they want to do a quick rebuild, they can clear a lot of cap out of the way. So they'll only have, like, I think, like $20 or $25 million guaranteed for next season. But like Theo was saying from before, the most valuable piece without a doubt is Derrick Rose. He's 31 right now, and he's getting paid $7 million for this season and then $7.6 for the next season. So you can lock a great point guard in for $7.5 million for the next 2 years. And you know he's going to play like this no matter what. Like, I don't think Derrick Rose at 32 or 33 is going to play radically different than him currently, barring injury.
Yeah, those three contracts that you named with Drummond, Griffin, and Jackson are some of the worst contracts. I mean, every one of those pieces is overvalued. So yeah. I feel like the Pistons are going to definitely have, especially with Griffin sustaining another injury, they're definitely going to have trouble moving those pieces. And I think with Drummond, you know, he's a solid big man. He always, you know, is top in rebounds. But I just don't see, you know, him being the level player that he thinks he is. You know, he's a back to the basket big. He's tried to expand his game out to the 3-point line this season, to what most of us have just seen, you know, the air balls on Twitter when he's tried to do that. But I just don't see him in today's game being the type of big who gets that type of money.
Yeah, I definitely would agree. The game has moved past this type of center, and so the value that you're paying him is not actually the value that he's worth. So is it really in your best interest to take on 28 or potentially more money in a long-term contract just to make sure you have somebody who's going to be able to do what a lot of young bigs can do if they're coached properly? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like you can replace this talent very easily for cheaper value, but who knows? Maybe somebody else will find value in that and will bite. I heard the Atlanta Hawks are potentially one of the biggest buyers for Andre Drummond. So we'll see if that happens. It'd be interesting to see Drummond and Trae Young play together, because Trae Young needs some help.
That's a fact.
He is nice, though, for given what little resources he has. He's still been playing pretty well offensively.
Yeah, did you see the movie put on the other day?
It was nice.
Behind the back, through the leg. Yeah, oh, facts. I'm so glad. Yeah, let's talk about this. Yo, the Nuggets have finally returned to what I remember the Nuggets being last season. And it's been so enjoyable. Jokic is so damn good.
He's one of the most annoying players because, you know, like, going back, like, you know, if you back in high school or where, whenever the last time you played, you get off the bus and you see somebody who looks like Jokic getting off for the other team as their star player, you're like, this game is in the bag. And this man is out, you know. He looks unathletic. He looks clumsy. And he's just, I mean, it's irritating. He's so good, it's irritating to watch.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because from an athletic standpoint, it doesn't make sense. But he is that good in terms of a finesse player, and his intelligence is very well in that. He knows who's going to be where in his passing lanes. He knows who's going to be cutting when, and he's just an amazing baseline passer too. Like, the way he's able to kind of like post up, attempt to do a fadeaway, and then just like kick out to the other side baseline is ridiculous. Like, he has pinpoint passing, and honestly, his passing opens up the rest of the players to do what they do best, like Gary Harris or Jamal Murray. Even Will Barton. I fucking love Will Barton on this team.
He's on my fantasy team. He always helps out.
This team is great, and I feel like they're honestly one piece away too. Unfortunately, they have like that Paul Millsap contract for like $33 million. it's his last year, but if you were able to trade that away and get some type of, you know, player that might be able to help you out a lot more, go deep into the playoffs, like that would be great. I feel like they're either a piece away or they might even be a dark horse contender for the Western Conference.
Yeah, I always feel like the Nuggets and the Jazz, they're always that, you know, they're solid every year. They have a chance to go deep in the playoffs. And then, you know, at the end of the playoffs, when they, you know, get knocked out, we're always saying, well, they just need this piece or this piece here. And I think this year for both of these teams, we'll see if, you know, it'll come to a point to, okay, are these cores able to continue to stick together and go this far, or do, you know, do some things need to be shaken up? And that's what the Jazz kind of did this year with, you know, going with what they did.
Oh, get Mike Conley.
Yeah. So I couldn't think of that.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like the Jazz have not gotten as much publicity this year as they have the other previous years, which is kind of weird because they are a sneaky good team. You know, they got Rudy Gobert. Obviously, they got Donovan Mitchell. And it seems like they've been clicking well. I haven't been able to see Jordan Clarkson on this team, but that seems like a good pickup for them. Yeah.
They haven't been as
good really.
As
the last year. I haven't seen a lot of Jazz games, but I just know they're always a lock for like a 4 or 5 seed. I don't know what they are now.
It's actually the Western Conference as far as the playoff is going to be pretty interesting as far as those last like two seeds, because right now Portland's not even in there. Everybody thought the Kings had a chance, but I mean the Kings are only a game back technically, well, like two games back, I guess. And then the Suns, I think the Suns have made strides. I don't think they're anywhere near being a good team in the league.
Yeah.
But they're not at the bottom anymore.
I definitely thought the Pelicans were going to be better than the Suns, even without Zion, and I've been happily wrong. I like seeing the Suns be good. I've been waiting. They've been so bad for so long. It's nice to see them have some form of marginal improvement. I want to see all of these bad teams get, like, a little bit better. I mean, except for the Warriors, like, they can suck for another year, but just karma from the basketball gods. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely love to see bad franchises improve over time. Like, I was hoping that'd be the case for the Kings. I definitely still think the future is going to be bright for the Pelicans. They just unfortunately are dealing with injuries and are still figuring out fit, but it's great to see BI and Lonzo kind of like play and have more control over a team. But like you were saying from before, Sterls, the Suns have been very interesting to watch. It seems like Ricky Rubio has been the piece they've been needing to kind of create more of the offense outside of having Dev Book just go off for millions and trillions of points.
Kelly Oubre has been playing really well too.
He had been dunking on everybody. I don't even know why people still go up
with him. Yeah, hopefully people have learned. If not, I mean, shit, more highlights for us.
And then I got to shout out that man, Ja Morant.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was going to be this
good. I mean, Memphis is in the 9th spot right now, ahead of,
ooh.
I mean, they're ahead of Portland, the Suns, the Pelicans, the Kings. I mean, like, at the beginning of the year, you would have thought Memphis would have been dead last. I mean, because for the casual watcher, the only person that Memphis really has is Ja. So, I mean, that's a credit to him.
That's true. This man has really put a franchise on his back and has made the team a lot more interesting to watch and play. I've strangely seen some games, and like that Clippers-Grizzlies game, like they dominated out the gate. Like, obviously, that was more bad Clippers than Grizzlies, but it's cool to see a young team, if given the advantage, given the opportunity to take advantage.
Yeah,
like that's really rare for young teams to do, and they've done that. They've had good wins against good teams like throughout the season. So the future is bright for the Grizzlies, and I just can't wait to see how they continue to develop in the next year or two. Because with a player like Ja, it makes more sense to have a foundational piece to build around, and that's how good teams get interesting.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited for their future with Ja and Jaren Jackson. Jay Crowder's on that team. He's pretty nice. They got a lot of.
Jay Crowder's also on that team. He's kind of.
Who was that? Oh, yeah, Jay Crowder and Kyle Anderson. Like they got a lot of nice young pieces, and then just having Jay Crowder be the veteran in the room, and hey, he's a tough guy, like always been a team player and stuff. And I think it really just helps that team mature along. And I mean, who knows how far they'll be able to go in like 2 to 3 years.
All right, so is there any other teams you guys want to talk about, either in trade rumor sense or just regular basketball?
So, I mean, as the Knicks guy, give us the scoop. I don't know what the rumors have been around the Knicks, but at this point, they're probably talking about cutting their losses with some people. Do you think anybody is going to be heading out for the Knicks?
I think Marcus Morris most likely will get traded, which kind of sucks. And the only reason why is players, apparently there have been a lot of rumors coming in that players have called their agents to try to get traded out. So, yeah, this is like not good from an organizational sense, but because of that, you look at the best assets that are on that team for contenders, and Marcus Morris is on a really short contract, so it's kind of worth contending teams to kind of just like eat up that cap and take a player like him if he's going to make a difference. Other good players that might get traded would be Julius Randle.
I was going to say.
Mainly because the Knicks hate seeing this man take the fucking ball up the court and just continuously use his left. Everybody knows you're going left.
He's having a good year, though.
Just develop your right.
He's having a good year, though.
He's had a great year. He's had a great year, and throughout all the adversity, the man still shows up and consistently gives 18 and 8. But why is he the point guard? You know what I mean? Like, and then just in terms of the guards, like I think we just have to keep them for now because we literally can't get anybody else. But like, I'm over the Frank Ntilikina experience. I used to be the biggest gasser of this man. I don't know if it came from my sense of just loving to troll or just me just accepting the shittiness of my situation, but Frank Ntilikina, great defensive player, but that's literally it. And then outside of that, like, there's other guards who showed moments and flashes in previous seasons, like Alonzo Trier, but they've never been really able to capitalize on this. The only shining moment of the Knicks throughout this whole season has been Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very excited to hopefully see this guy be in a Knicks jersey for another couple of years, because that is a player that other good players would want to play with, and that means something, and I'll take something at this point, being a Knicks fan.
How has Kevin Knox played this year?
He hasn't, and that's kind of the fucking problem all of this, is that they just don't play him. They'll just give him 10, 15 minutes, and then he'll kind of be nervous because he's young, and he's like, I'm not used to getting this little of minutes compared to last season. And he'll either just be really passive with the ball, or he'll turn it over early. But if those two things don't happen, he plays really well. And I think that's just him being young, and he needs to get more minutes. He deserves to get more minutes, especially considering where we're at. I know a lot of the minutes kind of go to RJ Barrett at that position. They play similar positions for the Knicks, which is weird. They kind of roll 3-4 forwards out and maybe a guard. So weirdly enough, in all of that, Kevin Knox is just kind of on the bottom of the depth chart for that. And it sucks. Doesn't really make sense. But hopefully, you know, with some of these trades that might happen for the Knicks, Kevin Knox will get more minutes. But yeah, outside of the Knicks being pretty bad, the only thing I got to add on to this is fuck the Nets. You can't buy New York's heart. You never will. You're always going to be from New Jersey. Give us Spencer Dinwiddie. Yeah, okay. Speaking of the Nets, is Kyrie
ever going to play?
Yeah. Is Kyrie ever going to play? Or like, what's the deal with the shoulder? Is he just choosing not to because he doesn't want to be associated with them losing? Like, it's just weird from a narrative standpoint. If you take a step back and look at the facts as they are right now, Kyrie starts off beginning of the season. He's trying to shake off the narrative that, you know, he wasn't the bad juju around the Celtics last year. The Celtics currently right now are the second seed in the East if we look at this season. When Kyrie played, the Nets were on a losing streak after being a really hot team that was a dark horse to get into the playoffs to begin with. Kyrie goes down, the Nets are back to being the Nets.
He said he can't raise his shoulders above his head. Well, not above his head, but like enough to shoot.
Oh, I believe the injury is a very real thing. But I also don't know the timelines of what it's like for the recovery of all these things. Because usually from what I've seen in the NBA, most shoulder injuries, you come back within the season. And like it's not like he tore several ligaments or anything like that from what I remember. Let me pull up the injury just to make sure, but like I don't think it was like several ligaments in my shoulder are torn, which would be the worst case scenario for a shoulder injury in basketball.
But yeah, like you said, it definitely looks bad, especially, you know, with Spencer being able to step in and actually get wins under his belt with him gone. I mean, it was kind of the same situation with the Celtics with Terry Rozier. I mean, he came in as a backup and, you know, did his thing, and Kyrie came back and they kind of pushed him to the side, and, you know, obviously he left because of that. But I mean, it's kind of been almost a repeat of that same situation. It's like at some point, you know, I know that the injury is real, but Kyrie is going to have a lot of negative feelings behind his presence on a basketball team and his ability to lead a basketball team if he can't go out there and produce victories. Because at this point, we all know that you can handle the ball. We all know that you can put up ridiculous scoring numbers. But how do you affect wins at this point?
Yeah, that is the big bottom line that everybody's trying to see from Kyrie. And most importantly, it seems like that's what Kyrie is trying to see from himself. At least that's what he portrays to the media.
Yeah.
Which is very confusing because that's also the same thing he fights. There's a lot of conflicting things going on with Kyrie. It's very interesting to watch from the outside perspective. And just to keep everybody updated, Kyrie has a right shoulder impingement. And apparently an impingement is caused by inflammation from repetitive shoulder activities, which makes sense when you play basketball. apparently the only thing you can do for this is rest and medications and also PT, which makes a lot of sense. But apparently the average timeline on this is within months. And when they say within months, it's like 1 to 3.
How long has he been out now? Has it been? I think it's been just a month, right? So far?
Yeah. So, which is pretty reasonable. And I think he's opted to not take cortisone shots or anything like that to speed up the recovery because it does long-term damage. Mm. So within that, I mean, it makes a lot of sense that the timeline is what it is. And I don't think athletes make up injuries to not want to play basketball.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like Kyrie isn't that type of person. I feel like athletes in general aren't that type of person. It is weird to me, like I mentioned from before, that Blake Griffin just opted in to get surgery just to get surgery.
Well, so he's done for this year. I will still
hold that for him.
Yeah. He just wants to be done for the year.
right. Yeah, exactly. And in Blake Griffin's case, like I think he's doing that on purpose. But I definitely wouldn't want to imply that about Kyrie or most other athletes because injuries are serious and you should take rest.
Shout out to Caris LeVert coming back. I need him.
Do you guys got anything else to talk about, or should we wrap it up here?
I think we can wrap it up. I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Well, that is another episode of the NBA Clinic in the books. Thanks to Theo for coming on. Get used to hearing this guy's voice. He's going to be hosting a lot more NBA Clinic episodes as we continue to move forward here with Sterls. We'll try to get more guests onto this, and we'll keep trying to do this a lot more frequently, especially because during this time of the year, this is when the Stay Tuned Network does nothing but fucking NBA stuff. Sterls, you know what I'm talking about. January to March, these are our months. These are our months to dominate.
Nothing else to watch.
Exactly. And with that being said, we'll catch y'all on the next one. Peace.
Peace.